The first piece I'm going to talk about is the Anavissos Chorus from 530 BC. It is 1 meter 94 centimeters tall and made out of marble. It is one of the finest pieces of archaic art. Its whole body is better rounded and finished than other pieces of archaic art, for example, Cleobis and Biton. Additionally, its face is far improved. The eyes, nose, mouth and ears are all clearly defined and well sculpted. They are also all in proportion, as is the jawline, which looks well defined. The abdominal muscles are also a vast improvement on earlier pieces. They are well sculpted and look realistic and naturalistic as what a human body should look like, rather than the more 2D earlier pieces. The thighs are also bulging, and the momentum is being carried on towards the left foot as the right thigh is larger than the left one. The muscles around the kneecaps also deserve attention, as the muscles just above them are contracting as they should do when someone is walking. However, there is still the archaic hair, which is repetitive and mundane, and is not good in any way at all. However, there are small curls at the front of his forehead, and trying to differentiate each strand of hair, which is a definite plus, and will be improved on in later years. It is also flat-footed, with only a tiny heel raise in the right foot, which again will be improved upon. The arms are still completely by the side of the body, again like earlier pieces, and there is little or no characterisation, with the character facing straight towards the viewer in a conflicting pose. The next piece is the Blonde Head, 499 to 475 BC, and made out of marble. What I like most about this piece is its revolutionary tilt and twist of the head. This gives the piece character. Rather than all previous pieces looking straight towards the viewer in a mundane and uninteresting way, this internalises the image and makes it seem as if the head is actually thinking something. It makes the head look pensive. It looks as if it's at rest rather than just blankly staring. In addition, it's also a well-carved piece. It's got a beautifully defined cheekbones, no archaic smile, and the eyes have depth. The hair is also a joy to behold. Each end of the hair is different in curling in an individual way, which is lovely. Rather than hair being braided, as all previous pieces have been as well, the hair is let out loose in strands. The hair also has genuine depth, as it is braided at the back and the braiding is further out from the rest of the hair, which again is unique and just lovely to look at. Finally, the Doryphoros by Polykleitos from 440 BC. It is a marble Roman copy of a bronze original. Again, it has the same internalised twist and tilt in the head. It gives the impression of a coherent human being thinking about something. However, another improvement from the likes of a blonde head is the contrapposto on the body, although the blonde head doesn't have a body. There's the compression on the right-hand side of the abdomen and the extension on the left, and it gives a pleasing S-shape running through the body itself. The left leg is also quite far back, and moving its weight onto the right leg, which is, again, quite revolutionary, although the Riace warrior does that as well. The arms are no longer by the side of the bodies as well. We have the left arm holding a spear, and this leads on to my favourite point about the piece. There is a slight raise in the left shoulder, which is a reaction to holding the spear, which is the tiniest detail, but it just gives that impression that Polykleitos was genuinely looking at his men at the time, and looking how their muscles reacted to different things.
The first piece that I'll be looking at is Hestia. Now, Hestia was made between 475 and 450 BC. What I like most about this piece is the elegant simplicity of it. The drapery, unlike many other pieces of this time, is not anything over the top. It's movement away from multiple lines to a suggestion of masses, which is more realistic. It conveys the aura of austerity of an older woman. In the simple unadorned peplos, marks her out as nothing particularly special, which is in itself unusual for our pieces, because most of them look at gods. Despite the fact that there is a movement from many vertical lines, the drapery is still elegant. The skirt falls with lines that are not of the typical vertical archaic patterning, unlike the Delphic charioteer. They are not all falling on a perfectly precise line, which makes it look a lot more natural. The face has had particular care taken to show a woman who is realistic, rather than an idealised figure of a girl, such as the other Chori. Her cheeks are quite wide. Even the position of the right arm seems to suggest disappointment. This, with the turn in the head, give the piece a personality, albeit an austere one. The overall impression is of simplicity and realism, and that, in my opinion, is what makes this piece so good. The second piece I'll be looking at is the Diadumenos. Now, this piece was made in 430 BC, by Polykleitos. The figure has an energy and arrogance that we have not seen in many earlier pieces. Now, the graceful rhythm of the contrasting tensed and relaxed muscles create an internalized rhythm of its own, which makes the piece seem more attractive and interesting, gives it more of an energy than a lot of other pieces, such as the Hestia or even the Artemisium Zeus, all of which look a lot more static in comparison. The tilt of the head downwards and the slight turn in it internalise the piece and show that the figure is not focused on the audience. He seems to be engrossed in his own actions, which gives him more of a personality, makes him seem more human, makes him look like he's thinking about his actions. The musculature is not as defined as that of the Doryphoros, or as on some of the Choroi. Instead, it looks a lot more realistic, though it is still human ideal, and the image of an attractive young boy. The relaxed pose and the accurate observations of the tension of the muscles and the upper pectorals tension, because of the tying of the ribbon, combined with the compression and relaxation of the trunk, make this piece very realistic and aesthetically pleasing. The third piece I will be looking at is Hermes and Dionysus by Praxiteles, made about 375 BC. What I like most about this piece is that Praxiteles has used the marble to try and show the radiance of skin and the softness of flesh. He does not portray this piece as a collection of bones and muscle. Instead, he has a personality and tells a story. The disinterest and arrogant boredom on Hermes' face is marvellous, complete with the desperate reaching of Dionysus, who is clinging onto Hermes' shoulder. Dionysus appears to be unconvinced that Hermes actually is holding him, which adds an extra intrigue to the scene. The musculature on Hermes, which is unusual for a god, is not idealised. Hermes just looks like a fit young man rather than a perfect god. His pose looks natural. The hip is pushed out to counteract the weight of the struggling baby, which is again a more natural pose, unlike the more contrived positions of the Riace warrior and the Doryphoros. The shadows fall naturally on this piece, and the position of the arms and the baby and their cloths mean that there will always be some shadow when you are looking at it, except for on the back. This will add to the realism, making it seem more like an actual figure in response to the light, rather than a piece which has been designed to look perfect and white and marble-like. The drapery of the support also is very impressive. It's changed the support from unwelcome necessity, which is tried to be blended into the background, into a work of art in itself. The folds fall naturally and the layout seems to be totally by chance, which is a very impressive piece. This piece, I would say, is very respectable and is one which almost manages to bring the marble to life.
Choroi 6 and 5 was made roughly between 530 and 520 BC. And as we can see, it's a development from the previous Choroi in fact that drapery has improved, especially the layers of the clothing actually has, and the intricate details of the distinct curls. Unfortunately, the arm has broken off, but as we can see, that's a clear suggestion of breaking the third wall, which makes it quite engaging. Also, we can see the realism of the face has been fairly well achieved, but still has the archaic grin, which places it in the 520s. The next sculpture I'm going to talk about is the Discobolos by Myron, dated roughly at 450 BC. This is a transition between the early classical and the high classical, and is notable due to the range of movements displayed from the feet, which twist outwards to suggest he has completed the throw, and the rest of his body shape, which shows him at the beginning point of it. His head is twisted down and out of the image, and shows him in a pensive thinking mode, rather like the blonde head of 499 to 475 BC. What is notable about this piece is the way in which Myron has achieved such a level of realism in the musculature, ribs, and the veins along his arm, and also the way he has relaxed some of the pectoral muscles and juxtaposed that with the tension in his lower abdomen. The hands have also been well achieved, as you can see, with individual fingers being noticeable. The Epoxyarmenos by Lysippos, roughly between 350 and 325 BC, is possibly the greatest freestanding sculpture which we all study at A level. What we can see is a full, complete movement, as you see by the raising of the foot, and there's several ways you can look at it, each being unique in their own right. The musculature and the detail has extended a full circle around the sculpture, especially seen with the clear and delicate musculature of the back muscles, and the intricate detail on the fingers and on the toes, which is definitely a massive bonus. The facial expression shows some not in-depth displays of emotion, but is isolated in itself, drawn into the motion of cleaning himself. Okay, the act of cleaning himself sort of isolates himself as well, as he covers his chest with his arm pose. And this is distinctly different from previous sculptures, which show like exposed to the viewer to look at and admire the musculature. The musculature itself is excellently achieved, but it is partly concealed by his arms. What we see is a very good achievement of contrapposto, which seems to be naturally portrayed rather than bolted on, as we can see with maybe the Adumnos pose.
The three pieces I'm covering are the New York Choros from 600 BC, the Artemisium Zeus from 474 to 450 BC, and the Ranger Gmenid by Skopas, which collectively cover the Archaic, Early and Late Classical eras. From these we see the progression and evolution from the mundane, over-stylized archaic pieces to the visually interesting and exciting pieces of the early classical to late classical eras. Firstly, the New York Choros. These early choroi were based upon an Egyptian style which was non-freestanding. However, these were freestanding and were used as funeral markers and decorative features. This goes some way to explaining the symmetrical nature of the piece and its very geometric nature. Proportionately, this piece is a failure. It has an elongated face, massive eyes and eyebrows, and an unproportionate legs-to-body ratio. The clear symmetry which runs through the piece is only broken by the left being in front of the right foot to provide balance in the static position. This, combined with the geometric and angular pectoral abdominal muscles and the knee configuration, make for a visually dull piece, where the quest for the inch perfect has led to a flat, unemotive and quite frankly poor piece. While this may be attributed to its early age, well, the sculptor did not have the means or influences to change this, shown by its lack of archaic smile. It is typically an archaic piece, and while this itself does not make it a poor piece, the repeated patterns, images and geometric nature of it and its muscles do make it poor. Secondly, the Artemisium Zeus, or Poseidon, it's not known. This is a revolutionary piece when compared to the New York Choros. The confrontational and dull-facing forward position has been totally abandoned, and instead we see the god Zeus side-on, throwing what would presumably be a thunderbolt. This is only made possible due to its being made of bronze, which allowed for the arms to be outright and unsupported. The position of the body, mid-throw, was ambitious, but certainly successful. The curve in the abdominal muscles, which goes down through his back right leg, shows the stress he is putting into his throw from the right arm. This arm has a slightly unfurled hand, and this intricacy is very successful, and I feel that it shows that Zeus has delicacy and control over his power, making the piece successful symbolically as well as visually. The bent left knee shows his powerful position, and this is partnered by the flat pointing left arm at the target. This shows the focus and power, as would be expected with a god. However, the muscles are not overly stylized. In fact, this is not a perfect man, as the abdominals are not present. This makes it more realistic at a human level, but also makes the piece the success it is. The advancement from the archaic period is great, though this is anomalous in its different position, being a god throwing a thunderbolt. This beautiful portrayal of power and grace makes it successful. The Raging Maenad by Skopas from 375 BC is a success in its portrayal of emotion, and to an extent its narrative. This Raging Maenad is actively praising Dionysus, and will be in a fit of ecstasy and pleasure, and this is accurately portrayed by the Maenad's head being twisted and thrown back over its left shoulder, as its pleasure is so great it cannot be still. The fact the viewer would look at the body with its head facing away adds a secretive feel to it, but this also allows it to add to its successful portrayal of emotion. The hair of the Maenad is also noteworthy, as it is flowing and curling around the body of the Maenad. This shows the movement clearly, but also gives it a certain beauty, as the hair is a far departure from the archaic cornrows that are shown throughout the studied period. The somewhat scantily clothing she is wearing adds some sex appeal to the piece, as it is a dedication to Dionysus she is undertaking, but more importantly, the way the clothing wraps and clings to her body shows the speed of her movement, as the modelling lines show this clothing to be moving to the left of the viewer. Emotionally, this piece is a success, but the musculature positions are not in the same league of the Artemisium Zeus.
The freestanding sculptures I'll be talking about today are the Arisodikos Chorus, 500 BC, the Critios Boy, 490 to 475 BC, and finally, Irene Peace with the infant Plutos, well, by Kephisodotus, 375 BC. Firstly, I'll start with the Arisodikos Chorus. It was a memorial to Arisodikos, now found in Athens. There is a definite breakthrough in the design. The head has smaller eyes, in proportion, together with a square jaw, shorter hair, and smaller nose. Because of this, greater realism is created. Also, there are fantastic curves in the body, far more realistic, not as effeminate as previous archaic sculptures. However, the arms are still locked at the side of the body. Nonetheless, the knees are not in the weird triangular style that has been seen before, i.e. on the New York Chorus. They're well-rounded and blend well with the leg. The Arisodikos Chorus has definite breakthroughs in realism, and that's why I think it's a fantastic piece of art. Next, the Critios Boy, 499 to 475 BC. It's a marble statue found in Athens. Gone is the rigid stance and formal symmetry, and it is far more animate. The weight has shifted decisively onto the back leg, and the head turned slightly. The slight twist in the head is very subtle, not pronounced. Finally, the right leg. It's bent. Maybe a bit of a breakthrough. Some suggestion he has had to shift his weight. Makes it less formal, at the same time adds fluidity to the piece. However, there are a few weaknesses. Firstly, although it hasn't got the archaic grin that plagued its predecessors, the expression lacks realism. Very blank expression. Not a lot of life behind the face. Finally, I will talk about Irene Peace with the infant Plutos, constructed in 375 BC. What is memorable about this statue is it may be the first metaphysical statue. The underlying message, the idea behind the image, is that peace is the nurse of wealth. If nurtured, wealth will flourish and grow, a fact of life much appreciated in agricultural communities. Also, it's try an attempt to humanize the gods. This was of increasing interest to artists in the 4th century BC. There's tenderness, the exploration of human emotions on the one hand, and the humanizing of the gods on the other. To make this a fantastic piece of art, it is rounded off with contrapposto, to give it a relaxed, yet indifferent feel. Thank you for listening.